You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the February 2023 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, which features Channing Tatum on the cover. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's the editor's letter with an illustration by Risco from Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief. Two opposing but not mutually exclusive stories about our current political scene appear in this issue, an apt way to begin a year that will be the gathering before the storm. Let's start with one perspective, optimism. As Eric Lutz reports in his column, From the Brink, in the places where election denial was on the ballot during November's midterm elections, many of those candidates not only lost, they conceded as much. Granted, that's a low bar, but considering what happened on January 6th, 2021, we'll take progress where we can get it. Three cheers for democracy. Now for the darker view. From Jeff Charlotte's road trip through Wisconsin following the Dobbs decision when, as he observes, that state became the only blue state in which abortion is now effectively illegal. Plumbing the depths of Trumpism and confronting its signs and symbols in an eerie exercise of door-knocking, Charlotte finds currents of fascism less nascent by the day amid talk of a coming civil war. It's not a hopeful picture, but only by seeing that America, clearly can we come to grips with it. I took heart from the teenagers Charlotte meets at the end of the story, out protesting the court's ruling. As one of the girls say, the only alternative to pushing back is to suffer like this, our rights stripped away from us by the minute. They're not scared. They know they're worth fighting for. Magazine aficionados understand that it can be just as enticing, if not more so, to read the publication back to front. Vanity Fair's Proust questionnaire is a classic back page, a window into the thoughts and dreams of a culturally significant person, accompanied by an illustrated portrait that captures their essence. Since 1993, that portrait has been drawn by Robert Risco, a Vanity Fair contributing editor and master of gesture and expression. Every month, we at the magazine have had the immense pleasure of seeing an actor, a singer, a writer, an athlete, or an all-around sage interpreted through his eyes, from the first sketch through to the finished product. This month, Risco turns the page on his marvelous run as our Proust artist-in-residence. With gratitude and affection, we thank him for his service, and I thank him for the drawing that accompanies this letter. Given that our plan is to enlist him for other features, we trust you'll keep seeing his signature strokes in Vanity Fair. And we welcome Ryan McAmis, making his Proust debut this month, with a rendering of one of my favorite writers, George Saunders. Ryan's touch with texture and color has captivated us, and we hope you'll feel the same. now for some of the contributors to this issue. George Cortina, Magic Man. He allows you to capture strength, vulnerability, and sensuality without reserve, says fashion stylist Cortina of cover star Channing Tatum. Overall, for me, it's not about fashion, but about style. It's more subtle. I'm interested in people that do not simply follow trends. Unless, of course, you create the trend. Chris Murphy, Power Chords. I felt the conflicting impulses of Gen Z, the ennui and the optimism, when talking to Willow, says staff writer Chris Murphy, who recalls listening to the youngest Smith's debut single at a school dance in 2010. Now she's on an entirely new path. But if you listen closely, you can still hear the girl from 12 years ago. Jessica Pressler, Magic Man. Pressler first met Tatum on assignment in 2011, when he was still making a name for himself. More than a decade later, Tatum is an A-lister, and although she says she found him to be generally older and wiser, Pressler was relieved that he is still America's most fun movie star. Kenzie Bryant, Maximum Dosage. Staff writer Bryant had the time of her life trying to make sense of the recent celebrity gossip mania. I think what it came down to is simple. Everything has felt so serious for so long, and what's easier to chat about than a weird brunch order or a salad dressing recipe, she says. Horacio Salinas, Silverbell. It all comes from my childhood. The way I see light and darkness, says Salinas, who photographed a striking collaboration between Fendi and Tiffany & Company. My dad is a blacksmith. I remember how light would wrap itself around metal. Unconsciously, I gravitated towards photography, he says. Kate Anderson Brower, The Role of Her Life. While reporting Elizabeth Taylor's biography, the author, who has written histories of first ladies and White House staff, was struck by something Taylor's longtime assistant said. She was always trying not to be Elizabeth Taylor. She was always trying to be the wife, but she couldn't hide in the shadow of a man. Now this from Britt Hennemuth, Burn Bright. Michael Ward is leaving audiences dazzled and his mother slightly scandalized. And he's pictured here in an amazing, colorful outfit. As the credits of Sam Mendes' love letter to cinema Empire of Light rolled at the Telluride Film Festival, the audience left the theater asking each other the same question. Who was that? Starring opposite Olivia Colman as her character's unlikely love interest, Stephen, an aspiring architect, the 25-year-old, Jamaica-born, East London-raised Michael Ward is already a BAFTA winner and It Boy across the pond. But with Bond rumors swirling and Brad Pitt leaving word for the forthcoming Ferrari flick, it seems Ward's megawattage has spread from the Rockies to Hollywood in no time. Like many Brits, an early brush with Shakespeare kicked off his acting ambitions. Aided by an encouraging drama teacher and a made-for-Hollywood twist, she became an agent and ended up signing Ward. Without her, this might not have happened. As the first artist in his family, he reflects, my mom's basically an unpaid actor. We've been through a lot, and she had to put on a front for us to feel like we were okay, even when she wasn't. The family caught a screening in London. Apparently, Mom just started crying, seeing her son's name come up as one of the first credits. And yet, she walked out on the scenes where I had sex with Olivia. I heard after the very first kiss, she was like, no, and got up. As for Colman, she's exactly who you see on TV in interviews. She's so open, so funny. She'd love to just go for a drink and no one would bother her. His biggest challenge, he says, is that I'm afraid of animals. It took months to get used to the idea of doing a single scene involving a pigeon. While attending his first Hollywood gala, Irish actor Carrie Condon, who found herself surrounded by supermodels, joked that Ward might want to switch seats with her. It wasn't that he wanted to sit next to Hailey Bieber, he laughs. I just wanted to be amongst the young ones, to understand how they're living in L.A. and stuff like that. Ward was seated with a few network executives. To know that these people even know who I am, let alone love my work in a film that they love, is insane. Full Heart, Margot Price's fourth studio album, Strays, billows with pop sensibility, rock guitar, and country lyricism. Here, she shares some inspiration. Just Kids, Patti Smith. I've read a lot of music memoirs, says Price. This one is hands down my favorite. Patti has influenced my work as an author and a musician. Price's own memoir, Maybe We'll Make It, came out last year. Ladies of the Canyon, Joni Mitchell. Because of Mitchell, says Price, I finally started playing more outside of standard tunings on my forthcoming album. She calls this record a blueprint for how to create pure, bone-cutting songwriting. Christina's World, Andrew Wyeth. I read that the title, courtesy of Wyeth's wife, indicates that the painting is more a psychological landscape than a portrait, a portrayal of a state of mind rather than a place. And on to the Vanity Fair agenda, promotions and events. Vanity Fair FETS interview with the vampire. In the photos, Vanity Fair's Chris Murphy moderates a conversation with the show's lead actors and executive producers. And Sam Reed, Jacob Anderson, Alan Taylor, and Bailey Bass. To celebrate the deliciously decadent series, Vanity Fair and AMC hosted an evening to remember for the show's cast and VIP guest. The Django at the Roxy Hotel was transformed into a gateway to the series universe, where the show's lead vampires, Jacob Anderson, Sam Reed, and Bailey Bass, mingled with guests, including executive producers Mark Johnson and Alan Taylor. Watch all episodes of Interview with the Vampire now on AMC+. Little Gold Men by Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair's twice-weekly Little Gold Men podcast tracks the ups and downs of awards season, featuring interviews with the contenders, real-time analysis, and actionable intelligence on the race to celebrate the best of Hollywood. It's the closest you can get to being inside the envelope. Subscribe now at vf.com/podcast. Silver Bell by Daisy Shaw Ellis, with photograph of the Tiffany and Company and Fendi hand-in-hand baguette bag in sterling silver by Horacio Salinas. Tiffany and Company might conjure images of sparkling stones and gleaming gold, but the brand's history is forged in silver, too. Baby rattles, swaddled in eggshell blue cloth. The Elsa Peretti heart. It was Tiffany that set the American sterling standard. Now that lineage joins forces with Fendi, a fellow LVMH brand, to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the baguette. Created in Tiffany's Rhode Island Hollowware workshop, this iteration features the official flower of Fendi's Italy, the lily, and Tiffany's New York State, the rose, in the shared language of It Bags and It Girls. At around 5 pounds, the Tiffany baguette weighs roughly the same as a chihuahua, or a little less than a bar of silver, but you can't accessorize with that. What's trending? Joyride. With moto jackets, ruby accessories, and studded boots, you don't need a license to succumb to the siren call of the open road. In the photo, a forthcoming adaptation of Danny Lyon's classic 1968 book, The Bike Riders, a chronicle of the Chicago Outlaws Motorcycle Club. One image, pictured here, is slated to star Austin Butler, Tom Hardy, and Michael Shannon. Fastlane, GXVE Can't Stop Staring Mascara, Louis Vuitton Jacket, YSL Beauty New Lip and Cheek Balmy Tint in New Flush, Dion Lee Top, David Yurman Necklace, Bottega Veneta Boots, Alexander McQueen Bag, Crown Affair, the signature scent hair fragrance, Tag Heuer Watch, Gucci Coat, Chanel Bag, Givenchy Pants, Hermes Beauty Rouge Hermes Limited Edition Lipstick in Beige Croisette, Kite Top, Ambush Jumpsuit. Trending now. And photographed here. This article, produced by Vanity Fair with Goldman Sachs. Sloan Stevens wants to give back. How the U.S. Open Champs Foundation is paying it forward. And she's pictured here with various kids playing tennis. Sloan Stevens has always been wise beyond her years. She went pro at the age of 15, and just 5 years later, she opened her eponymous foundation while others her age were still declaring their majors. Stevens has been grateful for the opportunities tennis has presented her, which is why she has always been so committed to giving back. I always say, tennis has given me such an incredible opportunity to do all these amazing things, Stevens says. I've met presidents, I've traveled the world. Tennis has been my vehicle for that. I've always loved to work in my community, and I'd love to give back and give people those same opportunities. Stevens won the U.S. Open in 2017, inspiring a new generation of American tennis players. But it was the launch of the Sloan Stevens Foundation in 2013 that will help her legacy endure. The idea for her foundation was simple: to give back to the tennis community and make tennis more equitable and accessible. And in the 9 years since the foundation opened its doors, she's delivered. Offering nearly 50,000 hours of tennis instruction is just the tip of the foundation's iceberg. It has also worked with 10,000 students in Los Angeles's Compton Unified School District, providing tennis instruction in an historically underserved community. Tennis is a very hard sport to get into, Stevens explains. You need a racket, you need courts, you need coaches. It discourages a lot of parents and kids. Tennis has given me so much, and being able to offer that to someone's child through sport and education is really important. From day one, Stevens' team at Goldman Sachs Private Wealth Management has been instrumental in helping her grow and learn, and in connecting her with like-minded people. When I started my new business, I really wanted to speak to some people that had done it before in that same sphere, she says. And Goldman Sachs was able to make those connections. As a company, they'll help you find or get to that person so that you can have that same success. And that resource has been awesome. Sloan Stevens is a current client of Goldman Sachs Private Wealth Management. The opinions expressed are solely those of the client, and no compensation was paid to her for any statements relating to Goldman Sachs PWM. This testimonial is representative only of the client and her experience with Goldman Sachs PWM, and your experience may differ. Goldman Sachs PWM does not request or advertise testimonials from all clients. Brokerage and investment advisory services offered by Goldman Sachs PWM are provided by Goldman Sachs and Company LLC, which is an SEC registered broker-dealer and investment advisor member FINRA SIPC. Foundation facts provided by Sloan Stevens and Sloan Stevens Foundation. Twilight Zone. What does it mean to rethink time and optimize it? Enter Lofa Skincare for Nightly Repair by Laura Regensdorf, with artwork by James Rosenquist, which shows a melting clock a la Salvador Dali. Never did I expect to become a watch person, fetish objects for punctual people, or so I thought, until I laid eyes on an elegant chopard from a Connecticut man's estate. On day two, it stopped, prompting a rookie lesson in manual watches. Like a Tamagotchi, I texted a friend. I took to tending my new pet each night before bed, winding up as I wound down. Temporal structure has its comforts, particularly following a tumultuous 3 years. The pandemic's lockdown phase saw people unmoored from daily rhythms, a void some filled with skincare pageantry, while the return to semi-normalcy has sent us back into warp-speed life. Cut to me waking up on the sofa at 2 a.m., stumbling to wash my face. That yo-yo effect drew me to Saving Time, Jenny O'Dell's sharp book, out March 7th, tracing the cultural forces that shape our conception of time. Clocks arrived as tools of domination, she writes, detailing how industry yoked time and labor to squeeze out every last drop of productivity. As planet-bound animals, we live inside shortening and lengthening days, inside the weather, where certain flowers and scents come back, at least for now, to visit a year older self. Sometimes, time is not money, but these things instead. Aging is its own wearable timepiece. A raft of topical products aims to stave off the crinkly, droopy inevitable. But tapping into the body's circadian rhythm is a way to get time on your side. Mid-sleep, the skin barrier is more permeable, leaving the door ajar for potent ingredients, but also moisture loss. Following UV damage, DNA repair peaks at night. When we're not getting enough sleep, we wake up and virtually every cell in the body is in a kind of high alert, says Rebecca Robbins, Ph.D., an instructor at Harvard Medical School and a sleep scientist at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Ample rest plus skin care attuned to biology is a twofer. It's a case of looking at dead time as active time, says Omarovska co-founder Stephen DeHeinrich. Feeling like Snow White before slumber, I dip into the brand's Midnight Renewal Serum, featuring retinol, a vitamin A derivative, and microalgae that helps quiet cortisol, the stress hormone spiked by a late-night inbox trawl. Many dermatologists vote for prescription-strength retinoids, but sensitivity steers me to gentler forms, such as a retinol with aloe and marula oil from Current State of Skin, a line arriving in February. Hardworking products need days off, too, making room for cocooning moisture. The PM serum and Shiseido's bioperformance duo acts as a dewy underlayer with a shrunken form of hyaluronic acid. Lancôme's advanced Genifique Night Cream is a cushiony overcoat of hydration. What about extra credit? One morning, eureka, I hit snooze and slip on Shani Darden's LED mask, turning my groggy habit into a virtuous session with anti-inflammatory light. It calls to mind a campaign for Estee Lauder's Advanced Night Repair with poet and brand ambassador Amanda Gorman. Repair isn't always about fixing what is broken, she recites like a clock. It's an invitation to reset, reassess, reimagine. And the products mentioned in the article are also pictured here.
Thank you.
Now here's Keziah Weir writing about books. Lush Life, a bouquet of books to celebrate all sorts of gardens. Tending seeds is a time-honored metaphor. From the fruits of Eden to the flowers at Manderley, this month take a more literal, though no less enticing, look at living with plants. From Vendome, Jennifer Ash Rudick's Palm Beach Living presents lush images of tropical homes, while Toby Musgrave's Reissued the Garden from Phaidon surveys more than 200 styles, from bonsai to Frida Kahlo's Mexican Courtyard. In The Garden Politic, out from NYU Press, Mary Kuhn views politics through the lens of 19th century thinkers cum amateur gardeners, including Emily Dickinson and Frederick Douglass. And Lucy Morris, The Kitchen Garden, from Thames and Hudson, highlights the growing and preparing of edible plants, food and thought. And the books are pictured here. Round Trip, works of nonfiction that go deep on the climate, music, and media. The Climate Book, The Facts and the Solutions. This collection, created by Greta Thunberg and out from Penguin Press, features essays from luminaries like David Wallace Wells and Robin Wall Kimmerer to provide a varied look at the climate crisis. The definitive Desert Island Disc, celebrating the beloved BBC Radio 4 show, which showcases guests through their music choices, this best-of collection includes excerpts of interviews with Jimmy Stewart, Dame Judi Dench, Dizzy Gillespie, Sir David Attenborough, and others. Unscripted, the epic battle for a media empire and the Redstone family legacy. In this riveting, succession-esque tale of the fight for control of Paramount Global, James B. Stewart and Rachel Abrams weave together a lawsuit, familial conflict, and the lurking Les Moonves. It's also from Penguin Press. Six-pack, thrillers, friendship dramas, and more new novels. This Other Eden, rendered by Paul Harding with meticulous precision at the turn of the 20th century, a so-called well-intentioned white missionary wreaks devastation on the integrated community living on an island off Maine's coast. Vintage Contemporaries, and Slate editor Dan Coyce's big-hearted debut novel, a pair of unlikely friends grow up and apart in 90s New York, amid protest and the publishing industry. This Other Eden was published by W.W. Norton & Company. Vintage Contemporaries, published by Harper. Age of Vice, the lives of a playboy heir to a dubiously obtained New Delhi fortune, his servant, and the journalist reporting on his family tangle in Deepti Kapoor's page-turner, which unfolds from a fatal car accident. From Riverhead, Victory City, spanning 250 years, Salman Rushdie's epic follows the intertwined fates of a young woman who becomes a vessel for a goddess and the attempted feminist empire she creates. From Random House. I have some questions for you. A film professor returns to her New England boarding school and reluctantly dredges up memories of a decades-old murder. In Rebecca Mackay's bewitching new book. From Viking. Central Places. From Vanity Fair senior vanities correspondent Delia Kai, a story of the push and pull of home. When Audrey Zhu visits her parents for the holidays, her past clashes with the person she thought she'd become. Published by Ballantine.
Thank you.
This program is in memory of Cynthia Claire Dove and is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections are by Mark Hoffman.